it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
CHGO White Sox post-game show coming to you live from Studio B of our CHGO offices here in the West Loop of Chicago. I'm your host, Sean Anderson. You can follow me at Sean_W_Anderson. Alongside me, Herb Lawrence.
Hello.
You can follow him at Ecknerwall23. He's our CHGO White Sox community leader. You can follow the show at CHGO_White Sox. Watching the game tonight with us and producing the show is Joey Spathis.
Hello.
I mean, we're very used to our producers chiming in here. So my bad.
Yeah, well,
we're getting used to it.
That's fine. I'm happy to be a voice and on the show. I mean, Sean, you know, I'm not shy to chime in. So call me Mr. Campfire Milkshake from now on.
Mr. Campfire Milkshake. Yeah. You can follow him at where people follow you?
At Joey Spathis.
It's a growing follower.
Growing the brand.
So go follow the very talented graphic designer, Joey Spathis.
Thank you.
All right, hit that like button. Make sure you're subscribing to the CHGO Sports YouTube channel. We are joining you after another Minnesota Twin win. They have won 9 straight. The White Sox lose tonight, and they were in it.
Yeah, they were winning the game,
you know,
multiple times.
So another pat on the old back. Good job, fellas. You tried real hard. Put that in the try hard column.
Yeah. The guys are really working hard, Sean. Stop talking bad about them.
Yes.
They're working hard for crappy results.
Oh, I know.
And we're supposed to just be happy that they're trying hard and they're working hard to be bad and lose to Minnesota Twins for the 13th, what is it, the 12th or the 13th last game, or the 13th of the last 14 games, and 7 in a row they've lost to the Minnesota Twins. So maybe I don't want to hear about them working hard. I don't care. Maybe work smart instead.
Those notable lazy Cleveland Guardians with their damn 19-9 record. Just you know.
How many games are we behind them?
I don't really want to figure that out. The White Sox are 14 games behind the Cleveland Guardians in first base. Anyways, we are going to be talking about a lot on today's show. Mike Soroka's start. We will talk about the White Sox bullpen, Jordan Leisure and Michael Kopech running into some issues. We'll talk about Andrew Benintendi's third home run in 2024.
Here he comes. Here he comes.
We'll talk about Martin Maldonado being sent home in the third inning, which was pretty tough there, and a lot more. We got Vinny Duber joining us from Guaranteed Rate Field a little bit later as well. And around the 30-minute mark, I will debut, maybe for the first time and last time,
yes,
the Minor League Minute. We'll maybe start calling it the Minor Minute. But we're going to try to give you all the stuff you need to know about the White Sox affiliates in about a minute.
Okay.
What's up?
No, Minor Minute's good. It works.
Do you have a different thought?
No.
Not in a bad way. I'm just trying to think like, you know, like I put, you know.
Just get all the people that did well down in the affiliates, which apparently are doing well this year.
Yeah, we had a couple. I think it was Wednesday and Thursday. There was 2 back-to-back 4-0 days. Today they went 2-2. So
hey, man, hey,
we'll take it.
That's 500. Can't be choosers.
Yeah, I mean baseball is tough. All right, let's start off with, I guess, the bullpen, because that's really where the White Sox were let down today. The Sox did a great job of getting on base. They were hitting Wood Richardson fairly well. I think they had 7 hits off of Wood Richardson. There was a couple walks in there as well. There wasn't that huge emphatic kind of, I guess, exclamation outside of the Mendick and Benintendi home runs. Obviously, it wasn't enough for the Sox, but they at least got 2 homers on the day. I mean, Beggars can't be choosers.
Yeah, they don't hit a lot of home runs, and you're getting from people that you usually don't get home runs from. Danny Mendick with his first home run as a White Sox this year. I think his first home run since, like, April of 2022 back in the day, or July of 2022. And then you get the Benintendi home run. That man's on a tear. Three home runs in the month of April? Sean, man, just hand over that hondo. You just want to cut it in half and just say 50 right now? Because that man's getting 10.
Well, no.
He's selling out for power. And all of them pretty much pulled?
There's a, maybe it's something new. Hey, since I started picking him since April 24th, the man has been on fire in pick to click. And also, I better get a win today. Four runs, three homers, nine RBIs, 9 for 26 for Benny. There's also a double in there. No walks and seven Ks. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
I know that Benintendi is a slow starter, a notably slow starter, and he even told that to, I think, Vinny and James Fegan when he first signed, that, you know, he's a slow starter and doesn't really get off to the best start. So you're right. Hey, maybe this is going to be the start of something new. 15 homers for Benintendi, 20 homers for Benny.
And his first stolen base this year, too.
And his first stolen base. I guess the thing that really sticks out to me is just he's not walking still. So Benintendi's now going to be a power guy. I just don't think that plays well for his profile. I'm not trying to complain. Three homers is three homers, and Pedro Grifol said he's trying to crush pitches where they're thrown, not trying to fillet balls. We saw that a ton where he's just, you know, looper out to left, looper out to left. He's thought of to start pulling the ball a little bit more, and he's actually, you know, going out there and producing. So I'll take it. I'm not going to complain. I know you can complain about his throw from left field in the eighth inning, though.
I mean, somebody pointed out in my comments as I posted the video, there's a single, sharp single by Carlos Correa. Manuel Margot has above average speed. The throw actually was fine. It was pretty much there when Manuel Margot was tagging home plate. That is not my problem. My problem is the throw was looping. It was way over the cutoff man's head. So Carlos Correa was easily into second base. And then Carlos Correa scored on Kyle Farmer's single, who was the next batter. So if you do the play right and you play fundamentally correct, Andrew Benintendi throws that ball on a line drive to the cutoff person, either Mendick or DeJong there. And if they, or at least they throw it enough where they can cut it off and the catcher has to decide if he wants the ball cut or not. And then you can keep Carlos Correa at second base or at first base. And then if you get a Kyle Farmer single, the worst it can be is a first and third. This happened last week. We saw that with the Sunday game in Philadelphia where he had a horrendous game and pretty much was benched a Monday game in Minnesota last week because of his horrendous Sunday. And so somebody pointed out that if this is Oscar Colas overthrowing cutoff men multiple days in the early season like he did last year, he's sent down to AAA, and then he's made an example of, oh, he's not playing right. He's not doing the things right. And then he's sent down again when he's not doing the baseball IQ things right again in August. So I don't want to give him a pass on that just because he's a veteran. And I guarantee there won't be words said by Pedro Grifol about Benintendi's overthrow of the cutoff man, because that's exactly what led to Carlos Correa scoring the run that put the Twins into the lead. Now, he made up for it with the home run that just happened, that happened right after that in the eighth inning, but you don't have to make up for it if you do the things right. You could still hit that home run in the eighth inning, and maybe you take the lead there instead of catching up with the Minnesota Twins.
Amen. I completely agree with you. I think the only thing I'd push back a little bit is the throw was online. It was a competitive throw. I was surprised that it was as ropey as it was. Maldonado wasn't really crouched at all, no. And it was thrown more directly at Maldonado, not more up the line. We saw when Maldonado tried to run home. It wasn't the greatest throw by Correa, cutting it off and throwing it home, but it was low and up the line.
Yep.
And Jeffers was able to tag Maldonado because the throw went into the runner. It's a guy with notably a mid to below average arm. I'd rather you just, you know, keep it safe and throw it in there. Because right then, you know, it is 4-4. But then, you know, as you brought up, Larnick comes up with Castro on base. Castro scored on the Correa single. But Larnick comes up with Correa on second. He's able to drive him home. I mean, again, you're able to take the lead with the homer in the eighth. So it's tough to give him, like, a ton of credit with the home run in the bottom of the eighth. Because at the top of the eighth, you possibly could have been 4-4 instead of, you know, 5-4. And then you're tying at 5-5. And then, hey, you know, maybe it's just a tie ball game going into the the ninth, right?
And I say squish, say mid. Those are fundamental things. This is winning baseball and not winning baseball. Winning baseball teams, if you have a hose, if you're a right fielder that has a hose, let it go. After once in a while, I'd be like, hey, man, show it off, brother. Try to get that tying run to stop scoring. But you see Andrew Benintendi's arm. I think it's in the 35th or 37th percentile.
It's up from last year.
Strength. It's not that great, but it's up from last year. But still, if you look at his Savant page, it's blue. It's not good. So he has to know, hey, I don't have the best arm. Manuel Margot is a plus runner. I don't have it right here. It was a hard hit ball. It was hit right to Andrew Benintendi. So maybe he was thinking I got the best of it, but you allowed that runner to get into scoring position. These are fundamental things.
Yeah, I mean, but we know that they don't do the fundamentals well because, I mean, even we look at them and, you know, Benny stealing the base. I forget when that was. It was the second? Or was it the sixth? When ended up being in the fifth. Benny steals the base, and then Mendick really negates it with a home run. But we also see when the Twins made it 4-3, they send the runner to second base. Maldonado throws down, and they run the play that the White Sox have run with Jeffers on third. There's a man on first and third. The guy at first steals second. Maldonado throws to second, and then Jeffers walks home to make it 4-3. If they're not making that mistake and they're just letting that guy take second, again, maybe there's not a run scored there. So it's just not fast. It's not technically sound. No. They're getting beat in a high school way. And it's kind of surprising that we've seen this from a lot of major league teams. I mean, the White Sox have been able to pull it off twice. I think the White Sox have gotten it pulled off on them twice. Just don't throw it a second.
That's the thing. Like, if the White Sox had never done it themselves and done it successfully themselves, I would be like, okay, that's kind of, you know, a surprise play that the Twins caught them on. But the White Sox do that play multiple times and have been successful. You have to have a play for it. You understand that other teams are probably going to try to do it to you, as it's been done many times in the major leagues. As I was taught in minor or in little league, throw the ball to the pitcher. Throw it low enough so the pitcher can count it off. And if that guy is trying to steal from third, the pitcher cuts it off, and then he has an easy out right there. You saw what happened later when Nicky Lopez kind of did that same thing, where he bobbled the ball up the middle, and then Kepler was trying to come home and then got him in a pickle. Like, I don't understand why you wouldn't be ready for that play. Like, first and third, one out, alert, alert, guys. If this ball is a strike and they're trying to steal, I'm going to throw through to the pitcher, or I'm not going to throw it at all, which they did later in the game where they did a double steal. But you got to be alert for that. You got to understand that that was their plan all along. Because you said, Jeffers didn't run home fast. He jogged home. Because, firstly, Paul DeJong dropped the ball and then pretty much went after it nonchalantly. It was nothing really like any urgency from the White Sox and any baseball IQ of, these people are going to pull off the same thing that we pulled off multiple times this year.
I mean, it just sucks to see. I mean, you just like them to at least have a game where they're not making these mistakes defensively. The stolen base there, the Benintendi throw. They're not leaving runners strand at multiple situations. I think they left the bases loaded at some point in the fourth inning.
They started the second inning with two singles.
Yes, Sheets and Vaughn.
Yeah, and then you get three straight outs. Benintendi with the rocket to center, a strikeout for Danny Mendick, and then a ground out to DeJong. I mean, they didn't move. Not only did they score, they didn't move from their positions. So, the Benintendi at bat, I don't fault him. It was a rocket. It was 96 miles off the bat. You know, he's trying to hit the ball hard. But the other two guys got to come through. I mean, Danny Mendick just looked at a slider that Wood Richardson threw right there. He had Mendick stay. And when he left the game, he's like, Jesus Christ, I don't want to ever see Simeon Woods Richardson again, because immediately he hit that home run off of what? Caleb Theobald? No, Funderburk. Yeah, he hit that home run off of Funderburk.
I love the Ray Chevy Funderburk.
It drives well.
I got it in red.
And we're talking about other things fundamentally that I thought were wrong. You got Martin Maldonado, who is the second slowest runner in Major League Baseball. I think only another catcher is slower than him.
Yasmani?
I think it's a former Cub catcher. Is slower than him by 0.1. But he's at first.
So he's the slowest person in baseball.
Tommy Pham.
0.1 is not that much of a difference.
Yeah, Tommy Pham hits a double to deep left center. And Eddie Rodriguez, the third base coach for the White Sox, says, you know what? Second slowest runner in baseball? get your ass to the house. And he's coming from first also. So it's not like he's coming from second coming home. So it's a shorter distance. Maybe he has a little bit more energy, a little bit more speed with him. He's coming all the way from first base. And you could see that engine just, nope, it's not going. And somebody's like, well, it took perfect throws. It's like, no, it didn't. As you talked about, Carlos Correa's throw like bounced.
Twice,
he almost hit the mound and went up the line. And Jeffers grabbed the ball and tagged him like 5 feet away from the plate. And initially, the umpire called him safe, but I saw the play and the replay. He's like, yeah, he tagged him. And because Martin Maldonado is slow, you could have had second and third with your three and four hitters coming up. I don't understand what the mindset there for Eddie Rodriguez. Not only the slow runner, but you have your runners or you have your hitters that you want up, your RBI producers up next. And so it doesn't make any sense for him to send Martin Maldonado home. Those are the things that you have to execute correctly. And Eddie Rodriguez, I don't remember a good send that he's had. Maybe I'm just focusing on the negative, but every time he's like, or Pedro says, well, we're just trying to score some runs. Well, we have to score some runs and we have to force the issue sometimes. It's like every single time. And that was the same issue with Joe McEwing. Like, when's the last time we had a good third base coach that knew how to send people in and knew the situation well at hand, who was up, who has the arms, and Buxton and Carlos Correa, who has a cannon of an arm, even though that throw was shit.
That's White Sox baseball, though. I mean, you know, you're right. I don't really think that we've had a great third base coach, and that's probably why under Pedro Grifol they're 67-125. It's ugly, and I'm not trying to dunk on them. I'm not trying to be a hater. It's just living in facts. I don't know if I disagree or agree on the Maldonado play. I didn't see it. I was listening to the radio call, and DJ said that, you know, you see Maldonado running well and he's digging in and you see that he's, you know, got good speed, you know, Rodriguez, not good. He's not good speed, but like for Maldonado,
yes,
he's at a good speed.
Yes.
Let's send him in. I don't hate trying to force the effort or you know, push the envelope a little bit. But yeah, I mean, Squish mentioning Maldonado tripped a bit too. And then Alejandro saying, don't even start with that Maldi home play. I'm fine if Maldonado's on third and Tommy Pham's on second and the White Sox are allowed to just, you know, put pressure on Simeon Wood Richardson. I think that's probably the toughest thing. Aloy ended up making up for that with a RBI single to score Pham. That made it 1-0. And then the Sox weren't able to get across another run. Aloy was at, third, I think? Or Sheets hit a second. Sheets hit a double, so Aloy was at third and Sheets at second, but then Vaughn wasn't able to drive in the run there. So the Sox were only able to score one, even again with, you know, runners on second and third. So if, you know, that's a single from Aloy there, you still have runners on. You just snapped at me.
Well, I was going to signal to you that we got to, you know, pay some bills, maybe shout out the old lineies.
Did you hold up the break zone ad?
It's right there under you.
It's right there. Come on, man.
I didn't see it.
Snapping at me.
Come on.
With your Rice Krispies treat hat on.
You can do
being
break.
Snap. Where's Crackle and Pop?
It's signed by Ludacris. Okay. So
it's signed by Ludacris?
You want to keep laughing?
All right.
Yeah, it is.
I'll stop. People can't see it, Joey. You're saying look it to us. I mean, show it to the people out
it's
there.
Not, is it?
I guess it's not actually signed like Ludacris. It's embroidered with Ludacris. Anyways, Sox had runners on second and third, and Maldonado's just staying at third and not being sent by Eddie Rodriguez. The Sox might have been able to capitalize. Joey wants us to take a break real badly, so let's take a break.
Dying for a break.
We'll let you know about game time. We'll talk to you about our friends over at Circa, and then we'll talk a little bit about Mike Soroka.
At game time, they believe that you shouldn't have to worry when you're buying tickets to your next big event. Game time is the fast and easy way to buy tickets for all the sports, music, comedy, theater events nearest you. And with killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, views from your seat, and their best price guarantee, Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying tickets. I just went to Milwaukee and had some tickets via Game Time. I got some zone deals. They were like $40 cheaper than they would have been otherwise. But I've been to Atlanta a couple years ago, bought some tickets on Game Time, checked all the secondary market sites, saw one that had a lower price in the section and row that I was sitting in, so I sent this information to Game Time, and within 12 minutes, I had 110% of the difference in my account. Game Time is the only ticketing app that gives you complete peace of mind with your purchase. You can see the views from your seat before you buy, so you know exactly what to expect when you arrive. All-in prices show you a total upfront, so you know you're getting a great deal without the hidden fees. And they're also totally obsessed with finding ways to you for you to save money. And I say this as you're a White Sox fan that doesn't like Jerry Reinsdorf and giving him money directly. Game time, all those tickets have been purchased by somebody else. And so they've already paid Jerry Reinsdorf that money. If you want to go to a White Sox game, and that's your joy, I would suggest you go to Game Time and buy the tickets via that, because you're not giving money directly to Jerry Reinsdorf. And you can bring your own food in a plastic bag and your drinks. So you're not getting money to him at all. And park on the streets on 31st Street. That's my little tip for you guys.
Giving away good tips.
Yeah, Game Time has a deal on tickets right up to the event, right up to the start of the event, and even an hour after the event starts. It's the place to go for last-minute seats. And with zone deals, as I explained earlier, you pick the section, Game Time picks the seats for an average of 18% savings. And at Game Time, they have a guarantee that means you'll always get the best price. You find tickets in the same section and row for less, Game Time will credit you 110% of that difference. So take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use the code CHGO for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code CHGO for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest prices guaranteed.
Herb, do you know what I hate?
I don't.
I hate talking to chatbots. And I, when Pascal Siakam was traded to the Indiana Pacers at the trade deadline, saw that the Pacers to win the Eastern Conference were at 50-1 and 40-1.
Okay.
So I placed a little wager on two separate sports books. The 50-1 one, I ended up cashing out because I was like, hey, I'd rather have $10 now than $10 in the future or lose my money, because I didn't really believe in Indiana. But they're up 3-1 against Milwaukee, and they might be advancing. So, hey, watch out. I got a 40-1 ticket out there. But I wanted to make sure I didn't cash that out. Mm-hmm. So I go to a different sports book. I have to call a toll-free number. I have to press 1 for them to go and call me. I get a call 30 minutes later, and the person that's calling me isn't registered to help me because they don't have a Illinois license. So then I have to go find the live chat. I get to the live chat. I finally get my account unlocked, and then I have to reset my password, agree to the team terms and services. What I'm trying to say is Circa Sportsbooks makes it a lot easier. They want to help you out. There are real people running the sportsbook who resolve issues in a timely fashion, unlike these other books who use chatbots. And I still have that $3.40 on a 40-1 ticket. Hopefully, those Indiana Pacers can help me cash a $135 ticket. But I know.
Playing right now.
What's the score?
They were down by, I think, 4 at half.
Okay, I'll take close that. But that's why I'm just going to be using Circa from here on out. Download the Circa Sports Illinois app at circasports.com/Illinois-app, circasports.com/Illinois-app to sign up today. Also be on the lookout for Circa events, watch parties, and tailgates. If you or somebody you know may have a problem with gambling, call 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537. Text GMB to 833-234. Visit areyoureallywinning.com. All right.
The Bucks are up by 9 in the third quarter.
Ugh. It's a comeback. It's a comeback time. Yep. You know, Pascal Siakam's going to drop 30. Tyrese Halliburton's going to drop 30.
No Giannis, no game.
Aaron Nesmith going to drop 30. Well, is he still on the Pacers?
Yes.
Yeah, he is. All right, I'll take
it. Nebhardt is on there. Yeah, Nesmith too. They both need, well, both Siakam and Nesmith need, what, one needs 24 points and the other one needs 25 points to get to 30.
I was saying the two good ones, Halliburton and Siakam, need the 30. But.
Well, Halliburton's at 13 points.
Okay, well, that's not good.
They're struggling right now.
Well, that's not good. Anyways, let's talk a little bit about Mike Soroka, then we'll get to the Minor League Minute, and then we'll be joined by Vinny Dubar. So Soroka walked out to Interstate Love Stong. I want you to start thinking about Stone Temple Pilots for later on in the show.
Okay.
Okay. But he was pretty good to start off this game. 7-pitch first inning. He had 2 Ks in that inning as well. A 14-pitch second inning, 21 pitches after 2, and then he had a 6-pitch third. 6 first-pitch strikes to the first 9 batters faced. He was extremely efficient. Mm-hmm. And then the fourth, it got a little bit out of hand for Soroka. 24 pitches in that fourth, bringing his total up to 51. He walked Julian, he walked Kepler, and then he had Correa up with runners on first and second, got down to a 2-0 count to Correa, threw 6 straight balls, then got to a 2-2 count and got Correa to ground out. Didn't allow a hit after the first 4 innings, and then he was taken out in the fifth after a scoreless and hitless first 4 innings, giving up a double to Castro, and even though Tommy Pham gave effort, that scored a runner, making it 2-1 Minnesota, and then Farmer with a double scoring Castro, making it 2-2 Minnesota. Soroka out, Banks in. What'd you make of Soroka tonight?
I thought he looked a lot better, a lot more in command using the pitches that he had in his arsenal early and often. Like you said, that seven-pitch first inning was just phenomenal, striking out guys with, I think, three pitches, and then I think the third batter just he got in his kitchen and he grounded the ball out. I thought he looked a little bit more confident. I was kind of perplexed why Pedro took him out after the fifth inning. The fourth inning was a struggle, as you said. He walked two guys, was wild, that whole thing. Maybe that went into it. It was only 67 pitches, I believe, that Soroka ended with. And so most of those pitches were strikes. And, yeah, he did give up the booty a little bit in the fifth, but it was only a 2-2 score right there. I would have let him get a little bit more into the game because you're not replacing him with your lockdown bullpen guy. Even though Tanner Banks came in and got the job done, I would have rather had Michael Soroka finish the fifth inning. He is only at 67 pitches. Giving up two runs in a game like that, I don't see why the guy was taken out unless the guy himself was either complaining about fatigue or they saw something on his face or on his arm that he's either hurt or fatigued himself. But, you know, it kind of worked out for the White Sox because Tanner came in and shut down the door. They got through that fifth inning and then had the lead, and they had a chance to win the game with Tanner being their pitcher of record right there. But I thought a little too early, way too early, especially, like you said, went into that fifth inning with a no-hitter and then didn't even leave that inning as the starting pitcher anymore.
Right, and they went with seven pitchers today too, so that's just kind of an ugly look there for the bullpen. Tanner Banks did allow an earned run, but I think that was on the stolen base, right? Because he was the pitcher then. He ended up getting credited with that. Steven Wilson had a nice inning of work. He did hit Byron Buxton, but was able to work around it.
On purpose.
And our guy Jordan Leisure. Oof. Finally had a real tough game out there. His ERA gets raised to 3, but allowed 2 hits, 2 earned runs, 1 walk. He did have a strikeout, but a tough day for him. Prelander Baroa had a third of an inning of work. He looked wild and pretty ineffective. 8 pitches, 4 strikes, so 50% strike rate. And then our guy Michael Kopech going out, and I believe, to steal one of your phrases, giving up the booty.
Oh, my goodness. Like,
wasn't a home run.
So no.
Is that not a booty thing?
He was just wild. Like, I mean, why is it always Byron Buxton in the ninth inning coming in against the White Sox, whether the White Sox are leading at that time or the Twins are have a slight lead or it's tied? Byron Buxton always starts it. He draws the walk. It was very wild from him. And Michael Kopech made sweet love in the ninth inning to, what was it, Julian, whose both of their birthdays today. I think Michael Kopech's 28th and Edouard Julian's 25th. And Michael Kopech blew his candles out. But then, you know, you just get the same old Michael Kopech type of things. And I don't know why he's so inconsistent, but he has to find a way to harness that 100. If he needs to throw with less MPHs to get more effective pitching, so be it. Do it. But I love 100. I love to see that at the top of the zone, but that one pitch to Buxton, the ball 4, was way over the catcher's head and almost went in the dugout. Probably did go in the dugout. Like, you can't have that, a non-competitive pitch on a 3-2 count to Byron Buxton. I know that you didn't want to put a high fastball to Byron Buxton and him do the Byron Buxton thing. That's why I think maybe a slider would have worked there or a cutter at 92 because he was looking dead red. And so walking Byron Buxton there is not the worst thing in the world because it's better than him hitting a home run because I would have been bitching and moaning about that. But then you got to get the rest of the people behind there out.
Yeah, but for a guy like Kopech, I'd rather see him compete. Like, that's the thing, is give up the homer rather than the walk. Because, I mean, I hear your point. You don't want him hitting a homer off an elevated fastball, but he was late on most of those pitches. It wasn't like he was seeing Kopech well. He was fighting up there. So I think if you get a more tantalizing fastball, Buxton's trying to react and stay alive. Yeah. You don't have time to judge if 101's going to be a ball or strike. Just make it more competitive. And I think that's the thing that really just, you know, makes me the most mad with Kopech, because it wasn't like he got super damaged outside of the, what, single by Margot? Like, Margot hit that ball well.
Yeah, he, like, chopped it down, and he just did what needed to be done. It was a 100-mile-per-hour fastball inside him, and Margot looked like he came with a plan. It's like, this ball's too fast. I can't turn on it, so I'm just going to chop it. I see that Byron Buxton's running. I can just have it in the isolated hole right there you have between the first and second baseman. It was smart baseball by Manny Margot.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's frustrating from Kopech. It's frustrating from Leisure. Leisure, you understand, because obviously he's young and he'll be, you know, working on just those moments. He still has an ERA of 3, so you're not, like, sounding the alarms for Leisure just yet. But Kopech, I mean, you'd think that this would be a role that he would grow into, a role that you would think he'd be more comfortable with, and I don't know if that's coming to fruition, and that's just frustrating because we had such high hopes for Michael Kopech once acquiring him in that Chris Sale trade, and it just has not worked out to, you know, be what we've wanted. Kopech today was averaging 99.7 on his fastball. Last time he was out, he was sitting at 100 flat. So, I mean, he's able to get to that 100. It's just, it's not, they're not strikes.
No.
So I would like for Kopech to throw strikes, and that's always been the story with Kopech. Okay, Joey, do we have the stopwatch for a minute here? I'm going to try to do the minor.
Yes, give me one second here.
Minute and try to get through this. We got four teams that we will cover. The Charlotte Knights, you got the Birmingham Barons, you got the Winston-Salem Dash, and the Cannapolis. I was going to say
Cannonballers.
Cannonballers.
So, used to be the Intimidators.
When was that?
Couple before they were Cannonballers, like 5-6 years ago.
Oh.
Yeah. I think named after Dale Earnhardt.
Really?
Yeah, I think that's his hometown.
That's sick. Why did they change that?
I don't know.
I have the Dale Earnhardt phone. Do you know what that is?
No.
You know how you used to have like a funny phone? You know, you used to plug a phone into the
wall. Yeah, right? Landline.
Yes. A landline. So it's a landline that looks like Dale Earnhardt's car.
Oh, the number three?
The black number three. It's pretty sick.
Very
all
cool.
Right. All right. All right.
Joey, ready?
Yeah, when do you want me to start it?
All right. 3, 2, 1. Here's your minor league report. The Memphis Redbirds took on the Charlotte Knights, and the Charlotte Knights won 4-3. Lenin Sosa hit his fourth home run over the last 5 games. Mike Clevenger made the start for the Knights. He went 4 innings, 6 hits, 2 earned runs, 1 walk, 4 Ks, and 1 home run allowed. He allowed 3 hits in the second inning along with that home run. According to StatCast data, he was down 2 miles per hour across all 3 of his pitches from last year's yearly average, and he had a 24% called strike plus whiff rate, only 5 whiffs on 36 swings. He's not looking great, but it does seem like he is getting closer and closer to his major league debut. We'll talk to that. We'll talk about that with Vinny Duber. Oh, no, I only have 18 seconds. The Rocket City Trash Pandas beat the Birmingham Barons 3-2. Drew Thorpe, 6 innings pitched, 3 hits, 2 earned runs, 2 walks, 7 Ks, 22 swings and misses, and he has an ERA of 120. The Winston-Salem Dash versus the Greensboro team, 9-2 loss for the Winston-Salem Dash. Jacob Gonzalez, 2 hits. It's 732 OPS. He was the 2023 first-round pick for the Sox. And then Wes Kath in that game, a hit and a walk. He has an 853 OPS. He was the 2021 or second-round pick for the Sox. And then the Cannapolis Cannonballers versus Lynchburg, they won 5-1. Your guy Riku Nishida had 2 walks, and he has an OBP over 370. He really hasn't had an average over 213, but he's able to get on base. He's got now 19 walks on the year, and he's got 12 Ks. So he's if Stephen Kwan couldn't hit the ball. So there you go. All right.
What's about the minor league minute and a half?
Yeah, stopwatch wasn't really that great. Let's take a break.
Hey, don't blame the stopwatch.
No, your stopwatch was great. My stopwatch time. Like I wasn't really great on the minute part.
You took your time with the Mike Clevenger stuff because that's the most important of the minor league stuff because that guy will be a major leaguer within weeks.
I'll sharpen
it. If not this weekend.
Iron sharpens iron. All right. We'll take a break. I heard the ring of Vinny Duber. So we'll take a break and then head out to Guaranteed Rate Field. Want to let you know about our friends over at Salerno's Pizza. Stop by Salerno's on tap, located at 1201 West Grand Ave in Chicago's West Town, and enjoy their tavern style pizza and ice cold beers. Beer. Whether you're headed to the game, want to watch it live on their big screen TVs, or you're watching it from home, Salerno's has you covered. Go to salernospizza.com or call 312-666-3444 and mention CHGO and get half off your pizza. Can I do the Big Dave thing? Half! Mention CHGO and get half off your pizza. Head to Salerno's Pizza or call 312-666-3444 for more information. Again, mention CHGO and get half off that delicious Salerno's Pizza. We also want to let you know about our friends over at Ray CDJR. Yes, our friends over at Ray CDJR. Are you in the market for a new vehicle? If you are, then we have some great news for you. Our partner Ray Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram in Fox Lake are celebrating the Jeep Celebration event all month long. And do you know what that means, Herb?
I don't.
You'll be able to say, rave about their savings on a wide selection of inventory. For a limited time, lease a new 2024 Jeep Grand Cherokee Laredo Altitude for $439 a month for 39 months. And if that Grand Cherokee isn't big enough for you, check out the third row and lease a new 2024 Jeep Grand Cherokee Limited L for $479 a month for 39 months. At Ray CDJR, you'll always be able to shop one of Chicagoland's largest inventories and drive home with more money in your pocket than you'd expect thanks to the Ray's price promise. So don't miss out. Shop great deals all month long and save big, because Ray CDJR makes buying a new vehicle more affordable than ever. And that's not all. Just for listening, you can get a free oil change when you mention CHGO at the service center, or mention CHGO when you book online at RayCDJR/service. So head over there on Route 12 in Fox Lake. For more information, visit Ray CDJR in Fox Lake or RayCDJR.com. Serving the community since 1963. Let's head out to Guaranteed Rate Field and chat with Vinny Duber. There's a ton to catch up with him about. We'll talk a little bit about Mike Clevenger. We'll talk about the game with Vinny. And we will also go into his chat with Ethan Katz about Garrett Crochet's workload. And you could read that up at allchgo.com. Hi, Vinny.
Howdy, fellas. How's it going?
Great. You know, it's fine. I don't know.
It's fine. That's what you say. Like, somebody picks up the phone. Hey, Sean, how are you today? Oh, I'm fine.
The White Sox are like 6-24.
You just be polite and say, I'm doing good. How are you?
I thought after 2.5 years, we might have enough rapport where, I'm able to be honest with my friend, Vinny Duber. But no, I'll put on a brave face.
I thought after 2.5 years, you would know that my response to that would be, Sean, you've got so much other great things going on in your life. Your mood does not have to be dictated by the outcome of a baseball game.
Give me an hour. All right. Give me an hour and then maybe I'll feel better. All right. Let's talk to Vinny. I think the first thing that we want to talk about is Michael Kopech. I don't know if Pedro Grifol has any thoughts on Kopech's last couple of outings and if there's anything, wrong about him, or if this is just the up and down nature of relievers.
I think it's the up and down nature of Michael Kopech, to be perfectly honest with you. If you look at what he's done this season, he is simultaneously been electric and then had plenty of nights where he puts guys on base, and sometimes he gets out of it and you forget about it right away because, oh, there are no runs on the board. He did what he was supposed to do. And then there are other nights where he gives up a home run to Salvi Perez, or he lets the winning run score like he did this evening. Kopech hasn't stopped walking guys completely. Not to say it's been as bad of a problem as it was last year for him, but there are still guys getting on base via the walk. And tonight he did it to the wrong guy in the wrong time. A leadoff walk to Byron Buxton is not what you want to do in a tie game. He did it, and I guess unsurprisingly, you could say it came back to bite him. So, listen, he looks good, really, really, really good a lot of the time. And then there is some time where he is giving up hits and giving up runs. And, the White Sox guys, be it Pedro or Ethan, who I talked to earlier today, were talking both about how this guy could be one of the best relief pitchers in baseball. He's got the ability, because of the skill set that he has, that fastball that he has, to be a dominant closer, an elite closer in Major League Baseball. Obviously, he's only been doing this for a little bit. It's just the end of April today, so he's got time to get better in that job, obviously. But they're the guys who are the most dominant closers in baseball tend to very much minimize the not just the evenings when they're giving up runs, but minimize just guys getting on base, period. I mean, White Sox fans got to see it close up with Liam Hendricks the last few years. So Michael Kopech has had a very interesting and a very first month that has been very much worth discussion. He has looked fantastic and unhittable at times, but then he's had times when he looks like he did tonight.
Through three innings, Michael Soroka looked like his best outing that he was having today. Fourth inning was a little rough, walked a couple people, was kind of wild, and still got out of that inning without any hits allowed. And then the fifth came where he was still having a no-hitter, and then hits after hits after hits, and then Pedro, after 67 pitches, took him out of the game. Was there any explanation why he took him out of the game? It was two runs that scored that tied up the game, so that's understandable, but did he see, fatigue? Was Michael laboring? What was his explanation of why he got taken out of the game, which I thought maybe a little bit prematurely?
I mean, I think it was the situation, right? I mean, listen, we've heard Pedro talk about through this very wretched start for the White Sox, how when there's an opportunity to win a game, he's trying to pull every lever he can pull to get him over the finish line. And granted, that was the fifth inning. They were far from the finish line. But, you know, Michael Soroka gave up two runs. He went in and tied the game up. And you know, all of a sudden, you're in a situation that you weren't in before. So it is a if you look at Michael Soroka's season to date, it has not looked very pretty. There have not been a lot of times where he's made it past the fifth inning. Obviously, that was not a lot of pitches. Obviously, Michael Soroka is a starting pitcher, and we always talk about the mindset of a starting pitcher wanting to go out there and rack up the innings and go as deep into game as possible. Managerial decision this evening, and you got to imagine it was Pedro not wanting to see a close game slip away because of the starting pitcher.
So let's go to the play that we've talked about most. It's Martin Maldonado being sent home. We've heard before from Pedro in games like this, and with the way that we have been playing baseball, we'd rather be a little bit more aggressive than, you know, have Maldonado stay at third base. Is this just Maldonado playing into fast? Is this Eddie Rodriguez playing into fast? We're going to be fearless, aggressive, selfless, and technically sound?
I mean, if that was the thinking, I think that would be, I don't want to say the word applauded, but understood. I asked Pedro about that play and that decision after the game, and he said he hadn't talked to Eddie Rodriguez about it by the time he was talking to us. But basically what he said was he was sure that Eddie thought that Maldonado could score on that play. And let's be honest, he almost did, right? I mean, it was a very close play at the plate. I think that Pedro even acknowledged that what everybody was thinking, which is, hey, stop him at third base. You got Aloy up with two runners in scoring position. Let him do his thing. But, you know, he didn't exactly praise the move, but he didn't really disparage it either. And you know, trusts in his coaching staff and trusts them to make those decisions. We saw a similar thing last year, right? I think Yasmani Grandal was sent home in kind of a similar situation where they needed a run, and it doesn't matter that your slowest guy is running. It's just a fact that they need that run right there. So I think the way Pedro explained it was that Eddie's thinking about all this stuff. He knows the situations. He knows what's going on. And if he's sending him home, it's because he thinks that Maldonado can score on that play. I'm not sure everybody would have done the same thing, you know, but it's a team that, like you said, Sean, could use the run, could use the wins, could use the momentum. And if Rodriguez thought that was the move to make, it was the move to make. It is not like he was thrown out by a mile. So I think that there are, you know, more egregious plays that we've seen over the years of even us just doing this show. So, but obviously that was a tough one. And in a it's a game where they could have used that extra run, right?
Even though I've explained it on the show, I've had pushback from people in the comments and on my Twitter feed, but that throw by Andrew Benintendi, I think it was in the eighth inning, where he's airmailing the cutoff guy trying to throw out Manuel Margot after the single by Carlos Correa. Did Pedro say that, hey, it's fine play because you know you're trying to get the guy out at home? Or would he like more fundamental baseball where you're throwing the ball at least where a cutoff guy could possibly get the ball, and so you don't advance the guy who eventually got the go-ahead run on the next play to get to second base?
Yeah, I asked him about that play too, and the answer was very similar to the one that he gave to the Maldonado play, which was he talked to Andrew about it. He talked to Benintendi about that play and wanted to know kind of what was going on there. I don't think, though, again, he didn't really applaud it. He didn't really disparage it. He said Andrew thought he could get him out. The play was not, you know, maybe as close as it could have been, but it wasn't again, a mile decided by a mile or anything like that. And certainly it's magnified right by what happened next. Cause the guy who gets to second base because of that is able to get home. What Pedro pointed out was that they had a shot at Correa at second, even though they had already thrown it home, and you know, the throw didn't go obviously the way that it should have from Maldonado. But, you know, yeah, again, these are the things, right? These are the things you talk about in these close games in a one-run game like this, because it very much could have made the difference, you know, when in a game they lose by just that one run. So, again, it wasn't something where Pedro got defensive or Pedro was like, absolutely, he made the right play. It was kind of like, eh, we talked about it. He said he thought he was going to get him. He kind of almost did. There was more play to be had, and that's how that went.
Pedro's brought up his own record because I'm not sure if he's aware of it, but 3-8 in one-run games this year, and then 22-38 in one-run games over the past, you know, two seasons of Pedro Grifol being White Sox manager. Has he talked about those close but no cigar games, or is it just, you know, they lost again, and, you know, it's, it joins the pile of 125?
No, he was basically saying tonight how they need to win these games, how these are the games they need to have. And he pointed out all the moments in which they had base runners that they left on base. And surely there was a lot. I think the one that really jumps out to me is Danny Mendick doubling right after Benintendi ties the game with the home run. You got a runner on second base with nobody out, not to mention a whole lot of momentum because you just, you know, you just took the guy who's been closing for this team deep. Obviously, they make the pitching change, and it's a good one for Minnesota. That guy comes in, and that Duran character comes in and gets everybody out. But yeah, plus I was singing Hungry Like the Wolf up here in the press box kind of nonstop when he, while he was warming up. But no, I mean, listen, that's one of many, right? There were a lot of moments early in the game where they had a runner in scoring position, you know, various numbers of outs, but there were a lot of moments in here where they could have done something. Look to the second inning, right? First two batters of the inning are Sheets and Vaughn. They both single and then out, out, out. So, you know, that happened multiple times this evening. And that's something that the White Sox have struggled with, as we've talked about for three years now, right? I mean, this isn't even a Pedro-only thing. We talked about it when Tony La Russa was managing this team in 2022, how the runners in scoring position thing just was not good enough, and it certainly hasn't been good enough under Pedro Grifol either. And he sees it, and he knows it, and he's like, we need to find a way to hit the ball when there's a guy on second base.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night, ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
It looks like the Tommy Pham effect is kind of real. Like, the hitting is there. Like, Tommy Pham is much better in his first four games than I thought he would be, and he's stinging the ball. And I got to give credit to him. I got to give credit to Andrew Vaughn. Even though he didn't come through in a couple situations, he's looking like the more Andrew Vaughn-ish player that we were expecting. And then, while I crapped on Andrew Benintendi for throwing over the cutoff man, the power bat is showing up. The man's got three home runs in his last four games. I mean, did Pedro talk about what's gone into why they're so much more offensively inclined? Is it just the opponents they're playing, or being at home, or just the contagiousness of good hitting?
Yeah, I mean, I think the White Sox would argue that this probably is what this should have looked like all along, right? And I mean, I think you kind of pointed it out. It's not like they're, you know, scoring 20 runs a game or cashing in on all these opportunities. We just talked about how they need to be better with runners in scoring position, right? So this is, even tonight, was not some sort of offensive juggernaut. But I think they would argue, hey, we got the guys that can do this on a nightly basis. This is what it should have looked like for the first 3 weeks of the season when it was just tumbleweeds. So, I talked to Benintendi yesterday. He kind of talked about just getting better swings, making better contact. I think that's probably what you're seeing. He was miffed that in his first 3 weeks of the season, he was just kind of missing pitches that he normally wouldn't miss. So I think maybe, you know, it's just a thaw in the bats. Maybe the slump is kind of, I don't want to say over, but cooling off a little bit, or heating up rather a little bit. I think that they think that this is what it's a lot more close to normal than what we're maybe seeing it as, because of, you know, the limited data we have, which is, oh, wow, they're finally doing something. Look at this. And this is unusual kind of thing. So that would be my thought there.
Favorite stat that Nate O shared in our Discord was that the Twins have won 9 games in a row and the White Sox have failed to score a run in 9 straight games at any point in 2024. So I think that's a big factor in it, you know, just getting more consistency. And we've had seen that consistency as of late, at least with the White Sox offense. I don't think there's been a shutout since that last shutout against Minnesota, right? They're still at 8 shutouts?
Correct.
Okay.
And they didn't get shut out this one or the last series.
Progress. This series not over yet.
It's not.
There's a game tomorrow. Don't jinx us, Herb. I think there was one more thing I wanted to play off. Yeah. I think you mentioned yesterday the clubhouse is in a better state compared to last April. 8-21 last April, 6-24 this April. Why is it different, even though the record is worse?
I mean, it's pretty obvious, right? It's different guys. I mean, we heard at the trade deadline last year, Rick Hahn bring up on trade deadline day that they believe that they solved some clubhouse issues with all the guys that they traded away, with the moves that they made. And then Chris Getz goes out this past winter and changes over half the roster, if not more of it, right? So you've got different players in there with different mindsets. The guys who have stayed over are connecting well with them. We just had Danny Mendick talking tonight after the game, saying how he thinks that the clubhouse has been great, you know, because I mean, the obvious question that we ask when the record is what it is, when the losing piles up like this, is, wow, how are you guys handling this? You guys doing okay, kind of thing? How's the clubhouse? Is it all right? And, you know, Herb, you ask me that all the time. And Mendick's answer was, the clubhouse is fine. We have plenty of fun when we show up here. The guys like each other, all of that stuff. So I think that the change in personnel, both at the trade deadline last year and then throughout the offseason this year, was done with very much this in mind. And, you know, I think that you're going to continue to see that, even if the wins don't really come with much greater frequency, just because these guys are just having more fun with each other and having a better time with being around each other than the collection of guys a year ago.
And this is not a serious question, Vinny, but I don't know if you saw in Arizona, they had a delay because there were bees down there. Do you think there were real Wisconsin bees that made the honey vice up there at Line and Kugel's?
Wait, do I think that the Wisconsin bees traveled to Arizona to delay the game?
Yes.
No. Oh, well, maybe. Maybe they wanted to give people a few more hours to have some delicious summer shandy.
There you go. Thanks for getting the plug in, guys. Really appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Would you rather have a bee stuck at the game and have a beekeeper throughout the first pitch, or have a magical sausage in someone's bag?
Well, if you're asking about specifically the twin sausage, yes, I'm going to have to go with the bees, just because the bees down on the field and the guy throwing the first pitch doesn't affect me in any way. Having to be around that specific sausage, I think, could lead to some health hazards. But if I get to have a fresh sausage, you know, that is right off the assembly line, then obviously I'm going to take that 100 times out of 100.
Assuming you're talking to Dan Hayes up in the press box. I mean, he wrote a piece. As long as it's not open, it's fine. It's not going to spoil. It's self-stable.
There's the danger of it opening. You don't want to pop that balloon.
All right.
Does it smell?
I don't know. It's not open. I don't think it smells. I'm not sure. Vinny, go try to find the sausage tomorrow and report back if it
just
smells or not. No? Okay. All right.
Getting anywhere near that thing.
I got two more baseball questions, Clevinger and Crochet. You wrote about Crochet. We'll save that for last at allchgo.com. Clevinger, you made a start today in Charlotte. 4 innings pitched. Two earned runs? Yeah, 2 earned runs, 1 walk, 4 Ks. When should fans expect Mike Clevinger?
Soon. I don't know if it's as easy as just saying 5 days from now. It's probably not that easy. Maybe it is that easy. Who knows? But, you know, they've been kind of close to the vest with the starting pitching and how the rotation's going to roll out. But, maybe as soon as, that series next week, the one down in Tampa, that might be as soon as it could be here. But the word from Pedro today was he had to start tonight. They're going to get together and talk about it and reevaluate it and figure out whether he needs one more down there or whether he can come up here and join the rotation. I would have to imagine that he's probably going to join the rotation pretty soon.
ESPN lists Keller as the starter for Friday. Has that been confirmed?
That is correct. They do have while Pedro wouldn't address that earlier, they did have the game notes did list Keller. I'm blanking on who would go Saturday. Who's
Keller
tomorrow?
Flexen? Keller, Fetty, yeah, Flexen at the wrap up, and then Keller on Friday, Fetty on Saturday, Sunday, Crochet. And then
that is correct.
Talking about Garrett Crochet, people can go read it at allchgo.com, but you sat down with Ethan Katz. It just seems like we're going to go out every single start and we're going to monitor and manage him. And it's mainly just because, you know, this is unprecedented territory of the amount of innings and pitches thrown.
Exactly. I mean, I think we talked about it at pretty good length yesterday after Garrett's start last night. But the idea of a Steven Strasburg, you know, magic number and then you're done kind of thing is not what's happening here with Garrett Crochet. And, you know, got the pitching coach confirming that, basically. I know, Sean, you for one and many others, but you for one have asked constantly, what's the plan? What's the plan? What's the plan with him? The plan is what we talked about yesterday, which is they're going to find these opportunities to cut him short a little bit, you know, cut a start short, give him one extra day of rest here, you know, kind of thing. And maybe by the and kind of bank, for lack of a better term, enough innings that by the time we get to late July and August, he's got enough in the tank to keep going. They don't want to get to the point where they have to shut him down. So I think, you know, the idea there is that it really is a day by day thing. Okay, he started yesterday. So here's day one. How is his body recovering? Day two, how's it recovering? Day three, where's he at? Day four, where's he at? You let him go back out there on day five. And then it's, okay, we got to watch him close. We've got all this data with us as well. Let's figure out when in this game is the right time to kind of pull the ripcord on him for this evening and make sure that he is staying healthy for the long term.
Tommy Pham likes and John Dinks watchers, so make sure you're hitting that like button if you haven't yet. You got one more? I got a final question we'll end on.
Just about Garrett Crochet, since they have these opportunities like they had yesterday to take him out earlier than, you know, 80 pitches, do you think that will change, like, I think, Sean, you called him Randy Johnson at the beginning of the year with his first three great starts, change the way he becomes a starting pitcher where he knows he is probably a limit of pitches he has to throw in a game. And so he knows I got to be more efficient with my pitches. So I'm not looking for strikeouts. I'm looking for weak contact. And I'm more of that pitcher instead of the pitcher who's powering my fastball and following it up with a change slider or cutter.
I don't know. I tend to think that his mindset will probably stay the same. He's pretty confident. He's pretty strong in that. You saw yesterday, he didn't want to come out of the game. His whole mentality was, I need to go six, seven innings to help the bullpen out. I don't think he has a desire to be anything other than what he envisions in his mind. And I think that's a strength for him. But also, it's going to lead to moments like last night, right, where maybe he needs to take a breather and remember what the plan is and why they're doing what they're doing. At the end of the day, though, I think it's just the lack of experience, the lack of innings, the lack of pitches that he's thrown that is making them act this way. I don't think he needs to act any differently, because the idea would be that after they get over the hump of this year, then all of a sudden they don't have to worry about him not having a base under him, because he'll have a whole year of being a starting pitcher under him and he can go out and probably have a much longer leash. So we'll see. You know, we'll see how this progresses over the long term. But I think this year he does him, and it's on Pedro and Ethan and all the rest to make sure that they're doing them in terms of protecting Garrett.
You tweeted out that Mike Soroka came out to Interstate Love Song. Final question. Favorite STP song? Herb, go.
A song called Plush, Unplugged MTV.
Man? It's Interstate Love Song. That's why I keep tweeting about it.
Okay. All right. It was my first time seeing it, so my Yours? Bad for not bringing it up. Herb, not only is it Plush, but it's the same exact version. So thank you very much, Herb and I, going with the same pick there, which makes it fun. I think we picked the top two played songs on Spotify by Stone Temple Pilot. What, Deep Cuts.
Creep?
Creep is not.
No, that's Radiohead.
Yeah, that's not Stone Temple Pilot.
Sex Close type enough. Thing. That's STP.
And then the STP guy went and did, what was the super group with Slash, right?
Oh, God, what's that called? Is that...
I feel like I know it. It's not Avenged Sevenfold.
No, it's, no. It's not...
Scott Weiland.
It's not Hunger of the Dog, because that's the other group.
Temple You're thinking of Temple of the Dog.
Temple of the Dog.
Their song Hunger Strike. Velvet Revolver. All right, that's Vinny Duber. You can follow him at Vinny Duber. Think he's our CSG White Sox beat writer.
The great 90s singers. They're all passed away except for like two of them. Billy Corgan and
Eddie Vedder.
Eddie
alive.
Vedder.
Yeah, I mean, and you mentioned Radiohead. Tom York's still alive. You can follow him at...
Go ahead. Never mind.
Alejandro saying Creep is STP, so maybe there's a second Creep. Maybe
I you're thought talking about, so. There was another song by STP called Creep.
Talking about a worse Creep. All right. Follow him at EckronWall23 is our CHGO White Sox community leader. I'm Sean Anderson. You can follow me at Sean_W_Anderson. Hit that like button. Thank you to Joey Spathis for producing us. We will be back tomorrow for White Sox Twins postgame. Goodbye.